The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we'll have my chat with theme park journalist Carly Wiesel. That's coming up on this episode 244 of WDW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. Or right now we have interviews with people that I enjoy and I hope you will too. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. How are you? Are you hanging in there? I know it's been a tricky time, but hopefully, you know, navigating this successfully will allow us to get closer to normal life in the future. I don't want to say near future because I don't know. But we have been keeping busy doing different things. The downtime has allowed us to make some progress on some to-do list items that we have been meaning to do for a long time. There's a whole Disneyland section of the website. The Disney Cruise Line section is under development. I'm creating an internet marketing site that I've always wanted to do. So we're kind of getting through that. We also have been putting out about 2 new episodes on for Patreon. We are getting closer and closer to having 500 patrons, which is exciting. And Heather and I do chats a couple nights a week. We're on Patreon, so we're keeping busy trying to just get through this the best we can until we can return to our happy place. I have left the information in the show notes about how you can help because I mentioned it on an episode once and I got a good response from that. So I will just leave it in the show notes. And if you are interested in helping in any way that you can, there are different things to do. Almost everything there is free. It's just showing support is very helpful right now. Today, I have my conversation with Carly Wiesel. If you are on Instagram or Twitter, you may be aware of her because she's a very busy part of the Disney community there. She's a little bit different person compared to like people like me that have planning websites, but she is a very important part of it and has lots of interesting thoughts and things to say about it. So I really enjoyed my chat with her and I hope you do too. Here is Carly. Welcome to the podcast, Carly.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm so happy to talk to you. Mostly, I'm used to hearing you through Instagram stories and tweets and stuff like that. So now we get to have a little chit chat.
I know, just screaming at you through every medium, if not in person.
That's right. This is another one we can add to the list.
Yes.
So let's start with, if people don't follow you and don't know you, how would you describe yourself and what you do?
Oh, I'm a theme park journalist. I am a reporter who specializes in travel and themed travel stories. I freelance for a lot of different magazines and websites. So sometimes I cover food stories at Eater. I cover ride openings at Travel and Leisure. And I yell about everything on my Instagram profile.
You do indeed. Your website says you're a writer and host who visited Disney World on a whim and basically never left.
Yeah, it is wildly accurate. I went for my bachelorette party in 2015, which, yes, time during a pandemic makes no sense. So, or what are years? But I went in 2015 for my first time as an adult, went to Disney World, didn't know what to expect, left completely obsessed with it, needing to know more, and basically just never stopped learning about it since then. So I was a freelance writer when I went there, and then I came home and couldn't stop writing about it, and it snowballed, and here I am today.
I'm very interested in your evolution since 2015, but before that, what kind of journalism were you doing?
I was changing my beat every year. So there was a time right before that I was focused exclusively on boutique fitness. because it was at a time when independent fitness studios and really innovative classes were all the rage in New York City. So there was an unbelievable amount of things to cover. It was kind of that start of the startup boom. So there were a lot of startups I reviewed. There were a lot of like new fitness classes, new gyms, basically a lot of new businesses emerging that I would write first person stories about and essays and kind of, you know, do experimental things where I would go on a Zumba cruise and write about what it was like to immerse myself in that community and just kind of bounce around and cover different random fun things.
So in that capacity, because I'm familiar with you as a writer, but your website says you're also a host. So is that, were you a host then, or do you still do that? And I'm just not aware of it.
I do it here and there. There isn't as much opportunity for it within Disney stuff, just because I did a huge video package with Eater and we kind of covered the ground we needed to. A lot of those stories are often told better in formats that aren't hosted, I think. So, you know, like you're gonna find out what you need if you're going to the parks on Eater through a map or through a reported story, I think, more than video. But video is a great supplement and I had so much fun doing that story. But before that, I was doing a lot of kind of random hosting. I did some comedy at that point. So I was doing, I did a thing for Mary Claire where I did man on the street interviews around Fashion Week, just kind of like a bunch of silly on camera things.
Have you ever thought about starting a podcast?
I've thought about it, but it has to be right because I have a problem with starting something and never finishing it, which if my husband could hear that, he would be laughing out loud. It is my specialty to be like, I'm going to do it and then just bounce. So hopefully one day if I can figure out something that would be different enough and worthy enough and wouldn't bore people to tears.
I feel like you could pull it off. If you could figure out the right systems and stuff, you can batch things, you know, like do a bunch of things at once and then kind of drip them out. I don't know. It can be done.
Yeah. I just love holding up my phone and screaming into it. So
you need something a little more planned or structured, I guess, to do a podcast. So I am curious because you are a theme park journalist, but do you agree that the perception of what you do is sometimes misconstrued?
Yes. In which way do you mean?
I mean in that you sometimes appear like an influencer, even though that's not what your job is.
Yes. I think I just happen to have a loud demeanor that kind of balances out the work that I do. It is very strange. I am a Gemini to my core. I just took that personality quiz that everyone's taking online to like see what movie character they are. And every answer I was torn between both because I am like loud and soft and I am like aggressive, but also scared. So I kind of just put on a different hat depending on what situation I'm in. So if I am at a work event and I need an answer to a question, I'm going to be a journalist. But a lot of times people don't see that because that's not something you post on Instagram. Like no one really, people see the end product of the work. They don't see how many questions it took to get that bit of information. So I think a lot of times I appear somewhat as an influencer because the format that these stories I'm telling on social media are being pushed through look of that aesthetic, when really there's so much true reporting and fact checking and accuracy and things that go into that that aren't necessarily seen on the surface when it's just me looking like the dork that I am in real life in front of a new ride.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have a lot of thoughts about this that you didn't ask me for, but I have them anyway. So I've been with you before when you said, I'm so glad you get it, because there are a lot of questions that have to be asked. And so, yes, there is fun pictures that you can post online, but there's a whole lot of tedious stuff that happens behind the scenes.
Yes, 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 yes. And it's, I mean, you know, like to fact check this stuff can be an unbelievable task. It's like a huge burden. So it looks pretty seamless, but all that work is not really accounted for publicly.
Right. And it's like, it's like you and I were at Oga's Cantina, and it's not just about having drinks. It's about what's on the menu. What are the hidden items we don't know about? How does this work? Like, it's about getting all that information that other people might just want a picture. But we're like, let's dive in because this is our job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I do find that an interesting aspect of you, though, because I think the perception and the reality are very different, right,
yeah,
of your job.
I think it's just, it happens to be that the mix of the platform we all use, plus the way I just happen to live my life with the job I have. Like I even, it might've been before I was reporting on theme parks, but I was very early obsessed with Snapchat. And so I would use it all the time, just kind of doing things like this, even though it wasn't theme park related, just truly loving yelling into my phone.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I would say that you are a modern style of journalist where you have your own following. And it's smart because when you hit publish on those articles for the different outlets that you write for, you have an audience that wants to read them. And I think it's smart to blend the two.
Thank you. It's so strange because when I first started out doing this, the core of my work was trying to translate visiting Disney parks to people who never go. So a lot of travel and leisure readers, they kind of run the gamut of Disney interest. So I always, when I write for TNL, I definitely make sure to contextualize things in a way where if someone is planning their first trip to the park, they'll understand it. I'll usually say what a fast pass is or mention that Walt Disney World is in Florida in case they get it confused with Disneyland. So that was what my work was for a while. And then I just became so invested in it that I became part of the Disney community as someone who was like online all day absorbing this. And then it fell over into like, oh, now I guess I am communicating with people who are also fans.
Right. It's different audiences.
Yeah,
for sure. One last thought on the difference between an influencer and journalist. I would say how you get paid is a huge difference. You are not getting paid to endorse any of the products.
I am not. I also, I feel like that sentence could have ended in not getting paid sometimes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff I do on Instagram, I almost just called it influence, like that was the name of the app. When I'm on Instagram, it is an extension of the stories I write, but it is a lot of hours, like true work hours that I put into it, especially around a ride opening. I'll write my story and I'll do any sort of work responsibility I have, but I take it upon myself, you know, as someone who is in the room doing the work, like I need to get this message out. And people who are on my Instagram account, like they're looking for this information. And there's a lot of there's a lot of very, very, very hyper detailed information that the only way for visitors to find out is through someone who can ask Disney directly. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is like me trying to help them get all the info they need, which is part of, you know, my umbrella work, but it's not something I get paid for.
Yeah, absolutely. Stories better, maybe, if you know what people want to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about tailoring it for a different audience. And so a lot of my stories can be for fans or for people who aren't familiar. But in my stories, I would typically never answer questions like, will Rise of the Resistance make me a little nauseous? Like, what can I expect from the queue? Is it outdoors? Stuff like that doesn't apply to the work, but then that's very valid stuff that I have the answer to, and I want to tell people who need that info. But to go back to your original question, yeah, I'm on social media, and I actually get worried about it when I post things. Like, I just went to a wonderful cheese store yesterday. Well, mm-hmm. I didn't went, meaning in the day of COVID-19, I phoned in an order and pulled up and they put it in my trunk. So like didn't physically go anywhere. But like I shared how great it was, and I just genuinely love sharing things I'm passionate about. But a lot of times that is how influencers make all of their money. So I'm not like getting a kickback. I just cannot. My natural demeanor is just yelling about the things that I love.
Let's be honest. If the cheese store wanted to give you a kickback, that would be just bonus, though.
I mean, just like me swimming in a pool of burrata. I don't think I can say no, but I'm happy to spend my money and support a small business on my own.
That's right. So we've talked a lot about Instagram. Is that your favorite social media platform?
Yeah, to me, it feels like breathing. I love it so much. I was on Snapchat before that. And then when Instagram introduced stories, I was done. That was my favorite thing. I do have a private Facebook group, which is a gas. It is so much fun. I was really struggling and am still struggling, honestly, to keep up with DMs because I just can't get to all of them. Like physically, the interface of the Instagram inbox is very tricky to navigate. It's not as easy as email. And I was like, I want to communicate with everyone, but a lot of people are saying similar things that I think that they would enjoy to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. So I started a Facebook group, and like in there, it's just a party all the time. And we're talking about Disney and we're talking about cold foam, which is like my weird coffee obsession. And that has become a really fun place to spend time. But Instagram still is the bulk of where I'm spending every hour of my day.
I happen to agree with you. Instagram stories are my favorite thing. And I also love my private Facebook group. It is mm-hmm. the most fun because then everybody else gets to talk to.
Yeah, it's so nice. It's so nice to have all the other voices in the room and then have like people discuss. There are some people who met each other in real life because they didn't know they lived in the same town.
Yeah, that's nice.
I love it.
It becomes something bigger than you.
Yes, which I want. I want everyone to have a good time instead of feeling like they need to talk through me to get a response about a vacation or a insulated mug recommendation or skincare or anything like that.
So speaking of your audience, I have observed online in real life that the people who follow you seem to be young adult women, probably in the same age range as you. Is that your experience as well?
Yes. It skews a little older sometimes, I think, especially in terms of parents who are planning a trip to Disney. But I do tend to bump into the people who are similar to me most in the parks.
I love it because I've been with you when, you know, young women swarm, Carly, which I love.
That was so unexpected when that happened when we were at Oga's Cantina. I realized you got a very strange look. My life is not usually like that. When we were there together on opening day, we ran into people and I realized it's because it was like day one. So everyone was out. So kind of anybody who would hang out with someone like me online would be like chomping at the bit to get into Oga's Cantina. But I promise my life is not usually like cool young ladies being like, what's up? But it happened that day and it was lovely.
I do love it though, because this niche seems to be male dominated. And so I love when there's new female voices. And I just feel like you're filling a void there, particularly for young women.
So. Thank you. Thanks. I've made so many female friends while from doing this. Like, I just think that the work that you do and that other women in this space do is so good. And I love that we're there. I saw a photo. Oh God, I don't remember when it was, but it was maybe the 30th anniversary of Hollywood Studios. Around that time, someone tweeted out a photo of the opening of Hollywood Studios, I believe. It was an opening of one of the parks, possibly Magic Kingdom, not sure, but it was all men. It was like a photo of like all men who were there. Mm-hmm. It was an old photo. It must have been Disney World. And it was like, it was unbelievable to think about that, you know, I was going to go to an event later that day and see a bunch of women who I do this job with when for a while we just weren't there.
Yeah. I'm thrilled about it. We need more balance because we all represent something different. So if you like female voices in writing or podcast or whatever it is, then we need to be there to provide that. So
I agree. Thank you for doing such a good job of that.
Well, same with you. I just had AJ on the podcast and I thanked her for raising the bar for the niche. Like I genuinely think women have done good work. So
yes, I am not an ASMR person, but AJ's voice is like the most soothing thing in the entire world to me. So I just, something about her specifically, like it, I think that I agree she has done an incredible job and hearing her talk feels like the whole world is going to be okay.
That's right. When I introduced her on the podcast, I said, your voice precedes you. So you may not need an introduction, but just in case, who are you?
I saw her recently and it was at the opening of Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway and she let me have a bite of her cookie and she was explaining the cookie to me because I hadn't had it before and I thought I was in a video for a moment. Mm-hmm. My brain was like, what? Am I in a DFB video? But really she was just letting me eat the Wookiee cookie, which I had never had and was so good.
Yeah, I haven't had that one either, but
it's delicious.
Something to look forward to.
Next
time. So you have been very open about having ADD, and
yes.
I am curious how you manage that, but still appear to be very productive.
Oh my gosh, that I always say that I try to be honest on social media. So if I appear productive, I'm lying. It is really, really, really hard. It takes me easily twice as long to do anything as it does for an average person, which has been an insurmountable challenge. Like especially in a pandemic time, I am really struggling because I realized the other day, the only thing I care about is communicating. That's why I'm a reporter. And so everyone is available all day now. And so I lost complete days just because I was texting people back and then it's nighttime. So in a current sense, I do not have it under control, but generally it's just kind of being my own boss and having ADD is very tricky. And I just have to try to realize what my hangups are and find ways to make myself do the things I have to do.
Yeah, I'm not jealous of your deadlines during big events because the days are long, God. The nights are long. I don't know how you keep
Yeah. Thankfully, with something like a ride opening, I don't have a choice. I just have to get it out there. But it is unbelievably stressful to not only make sure everything's accurate, but also write well after you've been in the sun for 12 hours is very hard, but at least the adrenaline of a ride opening pushes me through. It's more so when I'm back home and have to write a guide and I'm like, wait, where am I? I'm not at the park. What's happening? And I just feel like I'm floating, but it all has to get done. Just a lack of sleep, I guess.
Yeah, you just sleep less because it takes you longer to get things done.
Oh yeah. I've been staying up till 1 a.m. every day because there's no one online. I'm on the West Coast. So after midnight, nobody's really online when I'm in LA. So I write pretty late because there's no distractions. It's just, there's nothing happening. There's no news. There's no one tweeting. There's no one on Instagram. And I can focus because there is nothing else happening.
Speaking of living in LA, when you were traveling a lot, particularly to Disney World, how was that commute? And did you ever consider relocating?
Oh, I love the commute. It's like real. It's real strange that. So I am someone who should not work from home. Like I just love an office culture. I love talking all day, but also I am easily distracted. So when I work in an office, I get nothing done. So for me, being able to fly, I get the best work I do done on an airplane. Something about it, having a routine of flying to Orlando every 3 to 6 weeks and coming back is the structure of my life. That is my only commute. I don't have to drive anywhere. That's it. And I love it. There is one specific plane and flight that I take to Orlando every time. And just knowing I'm going on that plane, having that little routine where it's not every day and monotonous is a true joy. I love it. I love bouncing around. I also don't make myself live by normal rules when I'm there. So I don't try not to give myself too much work pressure. I try to just absorb the parks before I come home. So to me, it's a little bit of a vacation, even if it's not.
Yeah. So I guess you've never considered relocating because you like the way it is now.
Oh yeah. And my husband works at a company where we have to either be in New York or LA. So we moved from New York to LA, but we couldn't even swing it if we wanted to. Also, I kind of like being here because my favorite domestic park is Disney World. And so it's still special to me because I don't go there every day.
I would say the same for myself. I am in Texas. People keep asking, why are you in Texas? I'm like, because I still want to fly there.
Yes. I want to feel like I'm one of the people who are visiting. I don't want to feel like I'm driving home at the end of the night.
Yeah. I don't take it for granted. And I still have the plan like everybody else. So I feel like that makes me better at my job. Probably similar for you.
Yes, absolutely. I think if I lived there, I would just, just get into the habit of treating it like a local. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do as well, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I wouldn't normally ask a guest about their appearance, but how would you describe your style, your unique style?
In Florida, it is just desperately trying not to pass out. Uh-huh. I really like vintage clothes. I find myself unable to often find clothes that I like. I prefer to dress the halfway point between a baby and a clown. I love a ruffle. I love a gigantic muumuu. The only clothing that I'm drawn to are like, I have this whole folder of baby dress patterns that I want to eventually have someone size up for me. I just want to be wearing like a dopey little costume every day that's just like a potato sack in a bright color or print. So I'm, anything I wear in Florida is just a breathable option of that. I'm very fussy in particular, and it is so hot there, and I'm an indoor kid. I didn't go outdoors as a child. I just watched TV. So for me, being in the parks when it's hot is very, very tricky, and I am just trying to not look like garbage.
You love the color red?
Yeah, I love a color, love a pattern, love a weird graphic.
Yeah.
Love anything that, basically, if someone was like, oh, are you dressed up for a reason? Like, that means I did it right. If they think I'm wearing a costume and I'm just wearing a onesie with a clown pattern on it.
I'm usually just in jeans or cargo pants and not cargo pants, but capri pants and like a t-shirt or something. So here comes Carly in her red fluffy dress. I'm like, I don't even know where I'd buy something like that.
See, the funny thing is, like, I don't own a white t-shirt. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to buy them. I don't know, like, the idea of buying a solid or something that's, like, that would match with things stresses me out. It's the loud stuff. It's probably, like, my ADD again. The loud stuff, I'm like, oh, there's a dress. Like, I can see it, and it's calling to me. But if I had to buy a black turtleneck, oh, my God, I would lose it. I don't know what to do. It's also why packing takes me so long, because nothing matches. But I can only put weird clothes on my body. If I put on something normal, I am so uncomfortable physically and emotionally.
So it sounds like we're both doing what works for us. I just can't imagine where to shop for things like you, and you're the same. So let's talk about Disney parks a little bit, kind of good and bad. When you are going during a normal time, how do you plan? Because, like, obviously planning is my world, and we teach people mm-hmm. to be there when the park opens and the fast pass and the touring plans. But what is your general strategy?
Well, so personally, I really, 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 really struggle with rope drop. I'm coming from the West Coast, so I am at a deep disadvantage, and I'm rarely at Disney World longer than 3 or 4 days. So I never really have the opportunity to adjust and be able to wake up that early and function. I've done it a few times, but I usually get started later. And a lot of the times the research I'm doing is more ambiguous. It's a lot of, these are the 7 or 8 things I need to do while I'm here. And it's less like running and gunning with a schedule of trying to fit things in and see how they work. There are times when it's weird because, like, when I'm doing the best work in terms of, like, I'm going to rope drop, I'm going to do this, I'm going to schedule this out in advance, that's usually vacation. As strange as that is. If I'm there for work, I'm tied up doing things. I have meetings. I have to go, like, research and try XYZ food. But if I'm there on vacation, which is rare because I'm usually there for work, then I'm able to cram it all in and properly plan a trip and, you know, like, wake up in advance and do the fast passes and things like that. So yeah. It's more of a rarity for me.
So it kind of depends on the focus or the goal of the trip for you.
Yeah. And I, there's only a few things that I have to do when I'm there. So because I'm there so often, it's easier for me because I'm not scheduling out a full vacation like most people are, like I would advise people to do. Because if I don't do it this time, I'll do it next time.
Right. That's exactly it. I always do what I say, not what I do. Because mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. I'm showing up at noon doesn't mean you should. I don't have to be here at Rope Drop. I've been on that ride 100 times.
Yes, absolutely. I'm like, listen, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night to book a fast pass. Don't complain about it. But when it comes to my own trip, like, as long as I get one for Space Mountain, it doesn't matter if it's a 7 p.m. It's fine.
Right. I get it. So you mentioned that Disney World's your favorite domestic park. What's your favorite Disney park in general?
Oh my God, Tokyo Disney Sea, what a dream. If we're allowed to go international, that's my favorite. But if we're saying, like, pure domestic, oh my, I always come back to the Magic Kingdom, but it's such a tie because the Magic Kingdom, like, that, you know, it has all this stuff. It's the classic park, but I spend more of my time at Epcot or Animal Kingdom. So mm-hmm. I gotta go with Magic Kingdom because I can't be like, Epcot's my favorite. And then it's like, but Magic Kingdom, you doofus. So
yeah,
Magic Kingdom. Because it's the one.
Yeah. Luckily we don't have to choose. We can go visit them all. If we want
to. I agree.
I've never been to Tokyo Disney Sea, but it's definitely bucket list.
Oh my God, you would love it. It's just so nice, especially, you know, for someone like us who this is, our business is Disney parks, to go somewhere where everything is 50% familiar, but 50% mm-hmm. unknown, like just kind of figuring out their procedures. It feels like I'm not the client, but like I'm the reader. I'm not the expert. And it's really nice to step into those shoes and be like, wait, so how do I plan this trip? Where do I go to eat these things? And to be a little unaware of the things around you instead of like us who are hyper aware of like even when they increase something by 25 cents.
Yeah. It's nice to have something new again. It's like,
yeah.
And the similarities between the parks always are interesting to me because it feels familiar, but different. Like someone rearranged the furniture.
You know? Yes.
So like, I kind of know my way around, but I've never actually been here before. So yeah.
Yeah.
I am fascinated by that. So one of the most fun aspects of your job is that you get sneak peeks way before the rest of us do usually. And I know you've had some sneak peeks and I know the timelines are going to change, but what are some of the things you're most looking forward to whenever they do end up opening?
I was really, really surprised by how much I personally liked Avengers Campus. I did a preview right before everything started to get real wild and things started shutting down. And just seeing that land and the way it's going to sit in the middle of California Adventure, I think it's, as a local, it's going to be a really, really good place to hang out. And at DCA, I've always, you know, I walk around with friends and there's like, it's kind of like nowhere to go, but the land seems perfect for a California audience. And I personally am very excited to see what that is like when it opens, because that's where I will be spending my own personal time. In terms of the like everything else, selfishly, I'm hoping that Spaceship Earth does not get redone because I love it and I want to say goodbye to it again. But I was really looking forward to that Ratatouille expansion just because not even the attraction, but that crêperie and things like that. I want to see what it's like to be in that pavilion and have more space because I've seen the Frozen Ever After attraction come on, but I've never seen a pavilion expanded. So I think it's going to be really cool to be like, oh, there's even more of this. And I want to stand there and know what that feels like.
I think you will probably get your wish to see that since it was so close to completion.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed for that.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything, because I think like still the Guardians coaster will go forward because it's so far along. And, anything that I was excited about was sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get to see that come true someday.
Yeah.
So you have learned a lot, obviously, in the last 5 years, because that's when you started going and sort of dove in head first. Do you think your feelings are different than somebody who grew up going to the parks, or do you ever get any crap from people that, you know, oh, you're a new fan or anything?
Yeah. So I made the conscious decision to be very, very open about it from the start, because I do believe that people, like, doesn't matter what your full-time job is, if you go to Disney World regularly, you are an expert. Everybody who is in this community knows so much. And that's why we're so passionate about it, because there's so much information and there's so much experience baked into it. So I've always taken the approach of like, yes, I professionally may be an expert in this, but that doesn't mean I'm the expert. There are so many experts. Like, you talk to a mom who has been to the parks every year for 10 years, and she's going to know things that I don't know. And I'm going to maybe know random things from interviews that she doesn't know. So I kind of view it very collaboratively in that respect. But I think being aware of that from the beginning, and that I've approached it from a journalistic perspective, where I know a lot from this job, but a lot of what I know are the details that are harder to pull out typically. So I think my expertise is really like going into a situation, whether it be a land opening, a ride opening, a park opening, and just diving in and getting every bit of information I can to give back to the people. And I think that's the core of what I do, even though a lot of that is giving trip advice and servicey stories like that.
Yeah, you can kind of do a little bit of both. So let's talk about something a little bit harder, which is current times and what we're all going through right now. You have been very vocal on social media, which I have greatly admired, because I think when you're used to posting fun stuff, it can be hard to know what to do now.
Yes.
You know? So I'm curious how you feel about how Disney has handled things in the last several weeks.
I think I will say at the top that this, everything has moved so quickly, more quickly than I even could have imagined. I was in Florida when the first case was announced. I believe it was like the Sunday night before the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway opening. And it just felt like this threat that was very far away, but wasn't imminent. And a lot of the, I just don't want to start off by critiquing the company, because really, like, there was that one week, the week the parks closed, where every single day just exponentially felt more and more and more and more serious. But the thing that, I mean, I was very vocal about it on Twitter and on Instagram, and I think that the parks closing was a great idea. I think extending it to the length they have was a great idea. But I think that the way they physically went about the infrastructure of the closure was ill-advised. We were at a time where, and everything is blurring together at this point in retrospect, but we were at a time where the CDC was not recommending large gatherings, and the parks did two magic moments, one at Disneyland, one at Magic Kingdom, that were unnecessary, in my opinion. It was just an unnecessary additional gathering of cast and of guests. And the problem is that because this virus is so ambiguous, and because some people can be asymptomatic carriers and people don't really know, is that there's no way to trace back how damaging that could have been or how much it was. But I just figure if the CDC is recommending that we don't do large group gatherings, doing a huge fireworks show where I believe there was a special viewing area for DCP kids who, like, mm-hmm. I completely understand the idea of wanting to honor them when they're truly being, like, sent home immediately, which is tragic. And I empathize with everything they went through, because I can't imagine how horrible that would be to have your dream job and have it just ripped out from under you. So it is not at all a reflection on the kids whose lives have changed forever because of this. But I think that at a corporate level, I really wish that in the announcement of the parks closing, they would have slowly closed the parks down themselves within it. So maybe that's rescheduling fireworks, not doing a magic moment, not encouraging crowds to gather, like with getting all the DCP kids together, like just trying to stage close things instead of just leaving them wide open, unamended until the parks and then eventually hotels and malls closed.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on how that worked. I think my approach was more passive, and that I just wouldn't share pictures from those last couple of days because I felt like it was so irresponsible, even if they were Disney's own pictures, because they shouldn't have been gathered. But you've been much more vocal, and I wonder if you have had any negative reaction to that.
I've had a bit, but what it came down to is that, and this is again the conversation of, I may, on the surface, on Instagram, like if you look at my profile, I may look like an influencer, but I truly am a journalist at my core. And I feel that this was an unprecedented time where things like this are a matter of life and death. And just knowing, at the time I had a friend who came for vacation, and like the day she arrived, things were fine. By the day she left, she was flying home to a different New York City that she didn't recognize. And having an editor here in my house with me, like we were discussing that this is the matter of life and death. Like this is incredibly important. And knowing at that point how this virus can be spread and that it is spread easily among tightly packed crowds, like that, it was really, really worrisome. And even to the point where like the crowds were large, to have those photos posted on official Disney accounts as something special honoring the park's closure instead of the, like abetting a health crisis was very, very problematic to me, and I couldn't keep quiet about it. It's not really my place or has been my historical position to be vocal about anything like this. I'm usually, you know, just like telling people to eat caramel popcorn because it's great, but it felt so unbelievably important to point out that this is bad, because if a company is posting a photo of a large crowd, when specifically that is something that makes this virus spread faster, even if it's unknown to the people in the crowd, and then they will carry it home to their communities through TSA, through the airplanes, through grocery stores in their home, stocking up on supplies. Like it felt so important that I couldn't be quiet about it, even if it wasn't the type of carefree content that people usually come to me for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. Everybody has had to pivot in different ways, and it's been interesting to see you using your voice in this way. But I love it.
Yeah, thank you. I just went with my gut on everything, and it's a really strange time because my profiles are a mix between like sharing the horror stories on the front lines in our hospitals right now, which it's suffocating. It's so horrible. That how ill prepared our doctors are and how they can't get the equipment to keep themselves safe while saving lives, which seems like so basic. And then also being like, what delicious food are you guys cooking while trapped in your home? So it's definitely, it's a mix, but again, like my social media presence, which is mostly what I'm doing right now, is sharing things on social media because there isn't a lot going on in the magazine front. But my personal personality is a mix of like, panicking about all these things happening in our country and also being like, what does anyone do with beets? So like, it's kind of my profile is just conveying everything that's going on in my brain now, even if it's disconnected in a story term.
I think it's representative of how we're all feeling. You know, like I have no bread right now and I'm trying to figure out how to get it. By the way, Carly has a fantastic spreadsheet that I will link to in the show notes and that she has put together.
Yeah.
And I know you've been getting some attention. Lauren Graham saw you.
I had no idea. Lauren Graham retweeted it. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm using it right now because I'm having trouble finding groceries. So that's just real life. And also, how am I going to pay my bills? And how, oh my God, the news is horrible. And oh my gosh, I have to keep my dog busy. Like everything that you're posting is stuff that most of us are feeling anyway.
Yes. And I didn't even think about it. I feel like I was unconscious for 2 weeks because I just kept saying everything I felt out loud. And a lot of that was like, how do I help? How can I help? Which if I was, you know, a doctor would be like diving in and trying to help patients, but I am obviously not a doctor. So all I can do is communicate things people need. And I just kept coming across all this information. It was like, if I compile this in a way that's easy to read, more people can get it. Because my parents weren't sure how to get food. I wasn't sure how to get food. Friends in my city in different neighborhoods weren't sure how to get food. And so in all that research, I just spent way too much time figuring out different ways to sustain our new strange life.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had some criticism of how Disney initially handled this, but since then they're doing the best they can, I guess, right?
Yes. I think my only wish would have been, the problem is that Disney is so good at what they do that we can't not go to the parks. So even in the middle of the start of a pandemic, when all of the health advice is that being in a crowd can spread it to people, not just you. Like, I think that message was really muddied around that point. A lot of people who were in the parks, I don't think realized that them being in the park could affect someone else's grandmother a few weeks later. Like, it's just, that's how it works. And because that was so confusing, I think that's why, like, it, you know, if the parks are open for one more day, you want to go to the parks before they close. So like the parks are so compelling that we can't stop ourselves from going. And I think that I would have preferred if the parks would have had a phased closure so that it wasn't just like get your last kick in before they fully shut down. Mm-hmm. Because I completely understand the human need to want to like, I don't know when I'm going to go back to Disney World. Like, I got to get this last thing. I got to get this thing that I love, this thing that makes me happy, because that's what this whole community is based on, is that like, this is what brings us joy and we love it so much. And having it be completely open, unamended until a certain date, I think may have drove people to go.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that. Outside of this current situation, how do you balance being critical of a brand that you love? Because I do find it to be a bit of a struggle myself.
It's tricky. And then it always comes down to like, why am I here? What am I doing? What is the purpose of my life and work? I try very hard to, if I'm being critical, also highlight when the company does really great things. I try to be completely balanced in that respect. But typically, if something is bad, it's usually better for me to just not write about it in terms of a new restaurant or a new food, or if there's something that comes out that's more like consumer based, if it's not good, I'm just not going to, I'm not going to tell people to go there. I'll just tell them what is actually good and where they should go.
Yes, that is exactly my approach, actually.
Yeah.
The light on the good stuff.
Exactly. Like, I'm sure you've been to some restaurants, maybe at Disney Springs, where you're like, this was a waste of money. And so instead of bashing them, because like food isn't good doesn't mean that people there aren't working very hard. Mm-hmm. I'll just tell people like, this is where the food is great. You should go here. Yep. So it's like ghost criticism where I'm just, I just want people to have the best trip possible. And like yelling about how bad a pasta dish isn't going to help anything. It's better for me to tell them where is worth their money and their time.
Yeah, that is fair, I think. I have a few names of that you like, and I'm curious how you would describe them. Some is going to start a few people on the list. Okay, let's start with Morty.
My dog, who is being so well behaved today. He is my child. He is a 9-month-old puppy who looks like 7 years old. And I love him and he drives me crazy and I love him.
He's your firstborn and now he's your...
my firstborn.
And now he's your quarantine buddy.
Yeah, it's weird because like he's young. He looks like a full-grown dog. He is young. He's 9 months old and he does not understand why his life went from dogs all day to dogs don't exist. He is so confused because he sees dogs maybe once or twice a day and we're on the opposite side of the street from other people. Like all of my neighborhood is very tuned into what's going on. So everyone is very respectful of each other. So like he can't go anywhere near a dog and he doesn't get it.
He's so cute though.
Thank you. I love him.
Brett Iwan.
Oh my God. Okay. Not only is this man the voice of Mickey Mouse, he throws one hell of a Christmas party. I went as a friend's guest and it was a dream. His backyard, like I didn't know that he was also unbelievably artistically talented, and the entire backyard like feels like you're in DCA. He has like these national park signs, like truly a genius and a Renaissance man, and I cannot say enough good things about him.
He seems like a lovely human.
Oh my God. I've only met him once or twice and was just like, you are spectacular. What? Like at one point, I was at this party and I like went in the kitchen to get a tamale because of course he had tamales because he's the best. And there was this man talking about picture cars for movies. And I think it was his uncle, and his uncle just like drives old cars in movies when they need old cars. Just like the orbit around him, like everyone around him is great. And he just brings like so much good to the world.
He brings a lot of Walt energy to the job.
Yes. Oh my God. That is so true.
There's a whole podcast about him that people should go listen to because it made me cry at times because it's so sweet.
I rarely meet people where I'm like, it was an honor. It was like truly an honor to meet you.
Yeah. Lovely. He seems lovely. And I knew that you were acquainted. Tom Cruise.
Oh, listen, as I sit in front of my Mission Impossible Fallout poster, I am a new wave Tom Cruise fan. Like I really don't know much about his old films, like, which is crazy to say. I grew up not really watching movies. I'm a TV person, but something, I always just loved Mission Impossible, and like something about the recent films just really hit me in a way I did not anticipate. And I was so excited for Mission Impossible Fallout in a way I don't usually get for movies. And I have seen it an ungodly amount of times. I have the soundtrack on vinyl. I befriended systematically this dude, Drew Taylor, who I know, who's now my friend because I made him be my friend because he runs a Mission Impossible podcast. I am all in, but it's very franchise based. Like I'll see Tom's other new movies, but like I'm all about Mission Impossible.
I know you're so obsessed. It makes me laugh.
I love it. It's just such a good movie. It's just so good.
Okay, last name, Audrey. Is that your mother's name?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I was like, what? I thought it was going to be like someone's last name was Audrey, but there's a different first name.
I didn't want to say her last name in case it's not public.
Oh, no, it's Audrey Wiesel. She will listen. She's going to listen to this whole thing. I mentioned her once in like the third hour of a podcast and she listened to the entire thing. My mom's great. There's I think it's an oil painting or like a oil pastel drawing of her on my wall that I'm looking at right now that I stole off my grandma's dresser because I'm like, this is mine. She just looks like a little cherub. She's great and I'm slowly turning into her. for better or worse. My mom is a force of nature. She gets things done. She can convince anyone of anything, like a strong personality like I've never seen before, and also a bit like Beverly Goldberg on the Goldbergs. And she's great. If I turn into her, I have done something right, but also she dresses opposite of me. So I hope I retain that wacky part of myself.
And not everybody can say their mom is their park buddy.
Yeah, my mom's my go-to pal. I don't want to say she can hang because she has more energy than I do. She will be speed walking around Epcot. And if I'm like, I am beat, she'll just be like, okay, bye. And then just go speed walk somewhere else. Like, she is tireless, which doesn't make sense. I bring her on every Disney trip. I brought her on Disney cruises. I brought her on Adventures by Disney trips. And like, she just does not stop. It is crazy. I think part of why I'm always just like running around mad is because of that, but she has that gene so much stronger. I don't know how.
Well, that's probably a good combo. It'd be terrible if you didn't match up.
Yeah. No, she's a good time. She can, you know, we've all hung out. Yeah. She can hang.
I still follow her on Instagram.
Oh, good.
So I apologize that this is a loaded question, but what's next for you?
Oh, waking up and remembering that we're all trapped in our homes and trying not to freak out. Truly, I'm kind of just dependent on the park. I mean, I have a few projects that are in the works that nothing is finalized yet. So hopefully some new stuff, but really just kind of, I'm in the same boat as everyone else. I'm monitoring how this is going. I'm trying to be like the camp counselor that I cannot shake, which I was for years. Like, that's just my core personality now. Just trying to like keep people happy and motivated and entertained while we are all trying to stay sane in this current state of the world.
I want to read something you wrote recently, which I think kind of relates to this. It's a part of an article. Just think of it like that dip underneath the train station before entering Main Street. Even if you can't see the rest of the park yet, you know it's there on the other side. As you take in the vintage attraction posters, the buttered tin scent of the nearby popcorn stand, the first few details of those turn-of-the-century buildings, you can sense it's just a bit further. It may be a while until we emerge out the other end of that underpass, but it'll happen. Don't forget that. It will happen. I love that.
Thank you. Thanks. I write things and submit them and forget people actually read them. So that's nice. And very surprising and flattering. Yeah, it's like, it's there. And like every day I oscillate between feeling like I'm entering the tunnel and then feeling like I can start to see the buildings, and like very between where I feel I am on it. But it's guaranteed these parks will open again. It's just the thing that I've been really thinking about in the past, I guess, 24, 48 hours is that the parks will be there unchanged, but we will have changed so much. And I'm really curious to know what it'll feel like when we go back, because we're all in the middle of surviving something we didn't know we would be surviving. And so I'm really curious to see how we'll feel when we're back, because we will have changed so much.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And until then, we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online? And I will also link to it in the show notes for people that are listening away from their phones or computers.
Oh yeah. Because my name is crazy, I have my handle on everything. So you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Carly Wiesel. You can find me at my website, carlywiesel.com. I have a lot of my key stories on there, like the bigger random features I've done, like diving into Disney weddings or going to that crazy 21 Royal dinner, just a bunch of different stuff. But yeah, I'm all over the internet, but I recommend Instagram because I'm yelling at my phone all day. You can join our bunker cooking club. You can join our coffee party on Fridays. We'll have you with open arms.
Yes, I will link to that. And I follow all those places already. So hopefully other people can join in.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for talking to me. It's been great. I hope you enjoyed that discussion. I think that will wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For more information, you can always check the show notes in your podcast app or go to the website, wdwprepschool.com. Click on podcast at the top and look for episode 244. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.
We Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.